The Future of Journalism, Episode 14. The possibilities are tantalising. The Pandora Papers, just published, boasting the collaborations of 600 journalists across 130 publications, exposing global financial secrets and tax evasion until now hidden from authorities. Those collaborations were via the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Earlier in July, another global collaboration, Forbidden Stories, based in Paris, then exposed government spying via the Pegasus Project, detailing leaked 50,000 phone numbers with Israeli-developed spyware, enabling politicians to snoop on their opposition, activists, business people, and journalists. I'm Peter Wilkinson with the Alliance for Journalist Freedom, and the Forbidden Stories founder, Laurent Richard, discusses the potential of these global collaborations. So how many journalists globally worked on Pegasus?
So a little bit more than 80 reporters were and are still working on the Pegasus project.
And how many publications?
17 news organizations are part of this consortium, part of the Pegasus project.
And 17.
Sorry.
So are you confident that large collaborative investigations like yours have a strong future?
Yes, I do believe so. I believe so first because we are living in a world where there are more and more attacks against press freedom, against journalists, against people working inside the media industry. And collaboration is clearly bringing some protection. It doesn't make sense to kill one journalist if you have 79 other reporters ready to take over. So that's why collaborative journalism is really a model of the future of journalism. There is no doubt on that. First on the protection, but secondly, on the economical aspect as well. When you are covering, when you are part of that kind of project, you need the help of the other ones to build your stories, to be able to fact check what you are saying. And so behind each sentence, each information, you have 80 reporters who have been able to fact check that. So that's a real upside for the public opinion because you have high quality journalism.
Well, that's very important because, as you know, journalism is low on the trust meter. It's down there near the bottom. And the future of journalism relies on the trustworthiness of journalists to distinguish themselves from the other people who are publishing, you know, on Facebook, the fake news, the influencers, the rat bags, and so on.
Absolutely. And it's, I think it's, as you say, the future of journalism depends on the trust from the public opinion with a journalist. But, and I really think that that way of doing journalism, that way to collaborate with each other. And I think that's extremely important to restore the trust that way, to show that we can work all together for the interest of the public opinion.
So do you then, once you've done your long-form journalism, do you then break it down into the 60 seconds, 90 seconds chunks to make it more palatable for people who are used to getting their news that way?
Yes, we always do so. We are partnering with a channel on social network like Brut in France or in Europe. And we were producing, and we are still producing ourselves, some short form videos explaining the Pegasus project or all the project we did in 90 seconds. And we know that it's not a bad thing to tell a story in 1 minute. And we have to think about next generation, how to reach out to them and how to do good journalism in 1 minute as well, which is extremely difficult because you don't want to be to do some defamations. You need to be extremely correct and fair. So it's a special exercise, but we try to do the both. The long collaborative journalism with partners, Most of them are working for the print industry, print news organization. We are delivering long form documentaries as well, that we are producing ourselves, but also some short form social video for the social networks.
So listening to you, I can understand that your huge collaborative exposés are going to survive well into the future. And then the next level down are the global publications like the Britain's The Guardian and in the United States, The New York Times. And then there's a huge jump down past all the mid-sized papers that are struggling to local journalism, sort of regional journalism, community newspapers, that kind of thing. And then there's the online sort of 1 minute, 90 seconds programs like Axios.com. Is that how you see it? That the vulnerability is the traditional city papers that are struggling to try, still struggling to be all things to all people?
Yes, it is, definitely. And yes, and there is maybe yet not any kind of economical model for a successful economical model with that kind of regional journalism. But definitely what we try to do as well with Forbidden Stories is to not only do some collaborative journalism and lead some big project like that, but also to tell the other ones how to do that themselves. And so this is also what in the next 2 or 3 years we try to develop much more with Forbidden Stories, is to travel across the planet and to see how we can build regional collaboration without building a big consortium, but just something extremely focus on some regional stories and to enhance and to make sure that we can do that at the regional level.
So if I understand you correctly, besides doing the big global exposés, you are going to use your resources to do local stories for local publications. Is that what you said?
Yes, that's the plan, because there is basically two things we are doing with Forbidden Stories. The very first thing is that we are continuing the work of Assassinated and the Threat and Jail Reporters. The other thing we are developing is what we call the Safe Box Network. We want to make sure that if you are a journalist under threat and you are under threat because of your stories, you can send us the stories you are working on. And if something happened to you, and only if something happened to you, then we will be able to continue your work. But to make sure we can create that network, we need first some trust with partners. It's not that easy as a journalist to send your stories you're working on to another one you don't know. And I think the most efficient way to defend freedom of the press, to defend journalism, is journalism itself, much more than advocacy, much more than a statement. Criminals don't care most of the time about your statement. If you say it's not good to kill a journalist, we want justice for that, they say, yes, we will investigate, and they will do nothing. But if we are able to show the crimes they are responsible for and to expose that all over the planet, maybe they will think twice next time when it would be about their dirty businesses. So I really believe in journalism to defend journalism, but we have to make that connection between journalists, which is not that easy, because we have been trained as a lone wolf reporters. We have been trained to be the only one going on stage to receive an award. And so we have to think about that. And so something that is crucial is that sometimes, most of the time, when we heard in the morning radio, a morning show in the radio the morning, we heard that another journalist got killed in Mexico, another journalist got arrested in Azerbaijan. We see that as a new numbers, like as a metrics, like as a statistics, but we forget to see that there is a story behind. And we forget to see that most of the time the story is extremely global and very international, that this journalist who had been killed in Mexico was killed because he was investigating operating in Australia or in France. So that's not only a Mexican story, that's a French and Austrian story. That's why we need to have that connection established before.
And that's the value that Forbidden Stories can bring through the global collaboration. So it's through the collaboration of 80-odd journalists that you can protect everybody. Excellent. Laurent, that's very interesting. And thank you very much. And all the best with Forbidden Stories.
Thank you so much. Thank you.